my own, you know. On October 25th, 2011, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. And, you know, that just took me a little bit over 2 years. God gave me sobriety. And that's something. That is something I'm truly grateful for, but I don't take credit for it, if that makes sense. I was kind of hoping that day you guys could give up the trophy, though, a little bit. So I was a little bit hurt, man. I didn't see like a big foam finger and a trophy, and I was waiting for that one. I remember that when I was reading. No, you know what? It's good that we have fun, and I also like the readings that you guys have with this group. I know this is a really strong, serious committed group, and I respect that here. I like that you guys extend the readings in chapter 3 a little bit. I'm really, we're responsible enough to tell the newcomer, man, if they're not finished, and maybe they should give it another shot. You know, and it's funny because I've worked with the group, we practice that, but you say that in a lot of meetings, and we're viewed as controversial, you know, but you open the big book, and it's crazy. But that's some of the things I like to share about is just how I'm working the program today. I got a little bit of time. You know, when I shared at the meeting over back in September, they told me I would do about 15 minutes, and shared here, they said I'm about 45. And they said, can you handle 45? And I said, I can handle 45, I can handle 15. Right? Because I can be a little lengthy when I speak now, but that's really just because of the excitement and the passion I have for this program. And that's the truth. Okay? Because when I came in here, you know, I'm going to directly address the sick person that's sitting here right now and can't get sober. Probably have some alcohol on the system. I was just like you for a long time. And I would come to meetings, and I had asked that people would tell me things like, just don't drink, and I never had the power to pull it off. At one point in my career, I did. And after some time had passed, I couldn't do it. And so I'd like to speak directly to you that if you don't think that there's a sobriety gate waiting for you, and God doesn't want to have anything to do with you, I'm here to tell you that He does, and there is a date where you can be separated, not only from the physical aspect of alcohol, but you don't have to think about drinking again. And that's the truth. Going back, you know, really at my drinking career, and I've had, you know, another thing the book is going to tell me is I've got to bring my awakened spirit into these meetings, you know. I mean, it's not designed to come in here and we all drink. I think most of us drank, I don't know, almost everybody said they were alcoholics when there was the announcement. There was a newcomer and you just don't have the courage to put your hand up and share that they're new, and I get that. You know, I understand that. And a big part of this spiritual bullet that I'm going to shoot tonight, man, is directed and aimed right at you. And even if you're suffering in a new state, or maybe you got a few years sober, maybe you got multiple years sober, right? And you're still suffering. That's my primary purpose, share the message to the alcoholics and still suffering. Not the brand new guy or not the oldest guy in the room, but whoever's suffering. There's people in here that I'm going to speak to that spiritually are waiting on me, you know. But I know that I can absolutely learn, man. I never know who's holding the key to the gate, you know. I don't have to go to somebody, I've got just over 2 years sober, I don't have to go to someone with 3 years sober. I learned a great deal from them. And I spent a lot of time at finding recovery, and I learned a great deal from those gentlemen. You know, I stay on the fire lines, and a lot of times the big book says we got the most shortest places on earth. So that's why I spend a lot of time over there. And the Alano Club too. And I love both of those places, and I'm a service at both of those places. As well as I have an amazing home group, and I see some people here in that group, and I love you guys. Thank you for everything that you've done and for what you've given me. So I looked back at my drinking career, and I don't know about you guys, but when I started drinking alcohol, it really worked. You know, I mean, this stuff gave me some sort of sense of power. You know, I'm not going to get too much into it. I just want to talk about my awakening, but I'm going to take you back just for a little distance of my drinking so I can give you a lick. This stuff really worked. I started drinking. I wasn't one of these drinkers that people would see that say, you know, I quit my drinking. I was also racing, and I was running, and I was, you know, smoking crack, and, you know, doing all this stuff. I wasn't like that at all, man. I drank a little bit, and I liked the way the sensation it gave me. The difference was a lot of my friends said, I've had enough. I said, okay, we'll give you yours. And I liked it. And I wasn't prepared to like drink it. I was like, oh, alcohol right here. Grandpa, I had a problem with this. You shouldn't do that. There's lots of stories about alcohol. Oh, my brother does that. And he got in jail. And I had no fear of it. I guess looking back, you know, I was looking for some sort of power in my life. But I never felt like that. A lot of us shared that we felt like we were the awkward kid. It wasn't that. I was a very popular kid. I was a little league baseball team and I had a good family and the younger support. It's just I like alcohol. Now I know today that I'm really clear that I'm genetically different. And that was what was beginning to happen. Nothing externally was forcing me to drink. I remember liking to taste the beer. The first time I drank it was sort of strange. But I was drinking, and later on I did find that as I progressed, as the disease progressed and I grew up, I realized that I could take it or leave it, but then I started going to events for where I would go to have fun or socialize, and there was alcohol present. The alcohol thought started kind of switching. I don't know if anybody has had that experience where, you know, at first I'm going for things like a sporting event or maybe a party, right? I play music, so I would go to play a show or something. And that was awesome, by the way, PK singing before the meeting tonight, man. Yeah. It's true, you can do the robot sober, okay? I'm living proof of that. You know, and I'm looking around and I see so many people that I love and care for here, and you know, we do have fun. My message is going to be full strength, and I don't feel any punches when I speak, you know, but because I have such a serious program that's been tossed away in the book, I get to go out and have a life that's amazing. You know, I knew I was speaking all the year, but I was speaking somewhere in Fresno on a Friday. I woke up on Saturday and I didn't have a voice. And because I was singing Motown karaoke all night with my buddies that were back in town for Thanksgiving. You know, and I get to spend time with those guys and my family over the holidays. I hope all of you have an amazing chance to maybe get reconnected with your families. Maybe even more so in the men's process. I'll get to that in a minute. But that's completely transformed. I'm sitting, the relationship has been repaired, and I'm out there having a blast in life, in recovery, you know? That's the thing, the AA room where we're not supposed to go to bars. You know, we read chapter, you know, read chapter 7 in this meeting, you know, it says directly the opposite. But it talks about our intent, it's very important, and if we're shaking, we should stay away. But if we have a legitimate reason, we should go, and we should enjoy ourselves, and we should see the people. I'm really glad that I didn't change every person, place, and thing that I had when I came to the program. Because some of those people, they helped save my life. And they really, truly care for me and love me. And I got to spend time with them on Thanksgiving. And if I followed all the directions I heard when I came in, all the goofy stuff, I probably wouldn't have had an experience like I did this past Thanksgiving. You know, sitting across and meeting my nephew for the first time, who was just 2 years old. Or seeing my grandfather, who was 93 years old. Right? And still driving my grandmother home. From Thanksgiving, you know. But I shouldn't move to that town, right? Because that's my whole playground. There's so much bullshit that's coming to find me. But anyway, so I'm going through this drinking experiment. I'm going to these places, man. You know, I'm not chasing the fun anymore. I'm not really chasing the music or the event. I'm kind of going for the booze. You know, the booze is starting to take precedence over the actual function I'm going to. And this is even coming into play when I'm talking about high school. And I'm talking about going to first period history class and needing to take a little swig out with some grand vodka before I go into, you know, I saw this in my first step. It's kind of funny, you know, I'll philosophize it. I'll sit with you and tell you talk dark stories all day long. One-on-one, but you know, this is actually true evidence that I found when I went through Bill's story and turned it into my own. It's that this is an event that happened. I don't know if anybody checked out with some grand vodka, but I didn't start off high class. You know what I'm saying? You gotta use your high school lunch money for something. And it isn't exactly the case for the Grey Goose. But you know, brand or quantity or anything like that doesn't really matter, man. The thing what I was going for was chemical called ethyl alcohol. And once it was in my system, I was starting to feel a real relief, man. And all of a sudden I'm in first period history class and I'm feeling okay. So what I'm trying to get to is the point is there wasn't a whole lot of that. Yeah, my parents got divorced, and there was a few things going on, but the fact that I was, nothing external was driving the alcohol. It was just that the alcohol was in my system, and I was starting to have a physical reaction to it. And I know today that's what the concept of alcohol is, It's not really my past experience with being locked up or any of these wild stories, although I have a lot of them, it was kind of cool about seeing my friends. Remember, I saw Mandy, we were still with my friends, and she walked by, and this is on, Friday night, and, it's cool, when you guys are in a group with, people who are kind of, don't know much about AA, and you see someone from AA, at the store, it's an experience, and, I said hi to Mandy, and, she was so sweet, because she gave me so many compliments, and he's so humble, and all of a sudden, my friends are looking at him, and, she didn't know me when I was just all of a brand new deposit, still popping through kind of maniac. They saw me in a whole different light, this is what began to happen to me after I put alcohol. I started losing, I don't know, only control over the amount that I put in my body, but I started acting in ways that I never acted before, and doing things. And this is what we talk about in the doctor's opinion is, incomprehensible demoralization, man. It's crazy how chasing me over and over again. And I'm waking up remorseful and I'll never do that again. Here's the deal. How many people in this room have ever been sick from alcohol? Right? Okay, how many people have been sick more than once from alcohol? Okay? Pretty good chance they're an alcoholic. You know why? Because the average drinker, they get sick one time, they overshoot the mark one time, they never do it again. Am I right? The blackout just doesn't occur in the average temper there. Right? You understand? Never. Okay? But what we're doing is over and over again, man, I'm not going to do that again. Right? I'm looking at the taste of my mouth, man, it's a bad thing, and I'm, somebody's bad, and they got a fish in the leopard, so I'm like, oh. I mean, I woke up with a cat room in the room one time. Amazing, man. I was in Santa Barbara, and I polished up a bunch of booze, and I was down there visiting my brother, and I woke up, man, I thought I was in his room, because it was the same complex, all the rooms looked the same, but there were pictures of wild cats all over the wall, man, I was freaked out. It was a strange experience. I started out blackouts last week. But anyway, I went through this guy, and here's what happened. I want to get to my strength. There's just so much amazing stuff that happened since I began this process. It went on, and it became unbearable after a while. All these things multiplied, man. And I got to the spot where I knew that I had to quit drinking. I'll never forget the time I was sitting with my buddy in his truck, and I just said to him, it was the first time I ever admitted that, you know what, one day I'm going to have to stop drinking. I'm going to have to get sober. And he kind of chuckled, he didn't expect that coming out of me. I mean, I was drinking all the time, and that was that defined me as who I was. And, I just want to stop and thank God for a second, man. The miracle is that come true to me, But I didn't think it would happen for a long time, because it would be 7 years from when I told him that. And that's a pretty big statement the first time you say that. I don't care where you say it or who you say it to. The first time a real alcoholic says, man, I might knock this off. And you just slow down and shake your head. Oh, I've tried that. And I need to stop. You kind of get that little kick in your gut that kind of knows you're going to die. And I saw that happen. But it would be 7 more years before I even came anything close to drawing a sober breath. I was 22 years old when I made that statement. I would never make it to, I wouldn't make it to my first treatment center until I was 29 years old. And, through that, I tried so much controlled drinking. I did all sorts of crazy experiments. We read about it in the book, At one point, I would take a magic marker out to the bar, and I would say, I would literally do the Roman numerals on my head, but I said, the dark scores, the flashes, say I'm not going to go over 5 drinks. And I would do that. I would try to experiment that way. The problem is I wake up the next day and I have 3 marks and a genetic smear. And I have a phone number on my forearm. And I was going, man, this isn't working. And I started marking on the calendar. And I started setting up commitments with my friends. I tried to make promises. I tried not to drink on the weekend. I met my girlfriend one time who could go longer without drinking. That lasted about 8 days. And she had a drink, and then she said it didn't count because it was just one beer. That's kind of bullshit. If you got drunk, you know. And every time I would stop, I couldn't stay stop. I just couldn't pull it off, man. No matter willpower or hope or sickness or illness. Guys, I went through a lot. Through that age, before I was 29, when I had my first treatment center, you know, I got to the point where I was holed up in my apartment. I basically had no contact with the outside world. Like Bill Wilson talked about, man, I had become a lone wolf, man. My friends were terminated in a row. Even the drunks, right, and the people who did these other things with me, man, they didn't want to have anything to do with me. And that's kind of weird when you go to, like, a party house and you turn the lights off on me. See, you know, it's one thing going to grandma's house because she knows I'm coming to cash your money, you know? But I would go, and it was one of those experiences where I was one of these places, and as soon as they saw me coming, you know, they didn't want to have anything to do with me. And I would get right to the door, man, and that porch light would click off. I never forgot that feeling, you know, what that was like. Except for those occasional whistle blood stops where I'm taking another drink. Because nothing mattered, it was habit to drink. But I ended up holding up in an apartment, man, and you know, I just had enough. And with alcohol and a lethal amount of prescription drugs, man, I tried to get myself out of the game. And it didn't work. Obviously, I'm still standing here, and it's another thing I'm very grateful for, that God wanted to have something to do with me. He kept me around for a purpose. I'm real glad to know exactly what that purpose is today. I'm very clear on that. And that's to help other sick and suffering alcoholics. And my story is a testimony to that. But the good thing about that failed attempt at suicide was that it gave me my first idea of the fact that I could have a chance at recovering from this disease. And I ended up in a hospital. Feel this was sure in there, man. It's those ones where they hold you for 72 hours and they give you like a charcoal diet, and it's a lot of fun, man. Food is really good though, ironically. But I had a therapist tell me, first approach I ever had, the big book class approach was from a therapist, and he said, Eric, you can either go all the way you're living, or you can accept some help. And starting at that point, man, I accepted some help. You know, I did my last 48 hours in a hospital, and then on the way home, I got drunk. And that's the thing, man. I thought like I was never drinking again, though. Anybody in the treatment centers right now, anybody done some jail time, man, and just swore you were never going to drink again? If that obsession was gone, man, but you were loaded the day you got out. Right? And I know the suffers, I'm going to read some out of our post right now, just guided to do it, it's on page 24, right? And that's because of our initial obsession, and I know everybody that works on the book, man, these pages become counted, man, they become worn out, you know, because there's so much meat in here, but it's going to talk about it, it's going to help. It's just a fact, that's a fact, okay? Most alcoholics believe they have a cure, they've lost the power of choice and drink. Right? They've lost the power of choice and drink. So what do we do in order to tell people saying, I woke up and just showed my strength today? You realize the confusion I've given to the newcomer? I was pulled out for so long. If I just woke up and chose not to drink, I could take it. But see, my definition of alcohol is from the point that I've already lost the choice. I've lost the power of choice and I've lost all control. Okay? Here it is in the print. Okay? Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force of memory and suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without the place to make the first thing. All our willpower, man. Everybody in this room, my grandparents, my parents, my niece and nephew, everybody that's loved me, every counselor that I've ever gone to, cannot stop me from taking the first thing. I am without the place at certain times, man, that obsession is going to feel like it's wrong, but I'm drunk again. My only solution lies on a spiritual experience. It's vital. What's the first thing that happens when you go to a hospital? Right? What's the very first thing that happens when you go to your triage, right? They get you in there quick, man. They hit you up to my machine. You need the nurse to fill with that pulse and take you your vitals. Right? This vital spiritual experience is something that I'm going to have. Because Eric's defense is not good enough, man. My defense is going to have to come from a higher power. It must. Three-part program, man. Three-part solution, three-part belief. Mind, body, and spirit. So I pray that I have the physical craving, right? The mental obsession was very strong. I'm being loaded. I'm being drunk, man, right when I get out of hospital. And I'm dying quite seriously above all else. So then I'm fit for all those areas, man. And I don't think about drinking. That's the truth. But for a long time, it was a far cry from that. You know, so I got to my first treatment center. It's cool because there's some people from that treatment center here today, you know. And the problem with that treatment center, it was amazing. Great people, great meetings. They really had a 12-step fellowship, but then the problem was they let me go home at night. that was kind of the thing. The book's going to say that we favor hospitalization for those, for men so that they can get their head cleared before they're approached. And the truth is, and I can say it all honest to you, when I was doing that outpatient program, I had never got clear. Due to the use and abuse of many psychotropic medications. And, we're in AA, I'm not a doctor, I'm not going to tell you to come up. But if you walk away here and say, therapy told me to come off my medication, you heard me wrong. Okay, you did. You heard me wrong. Okay, you got that? This is reported, right? and I didn't tell you to sacrifice your cat either, okay? It's really long. I speak a lot. I hear the weirdest things that people come out. I'm sorry you heard that, but that's not what I said. My experience is that I'm free from every single one of those today, you know, and that was something that needed to happen, man. Because I needed to get right with God. And the chemicals that were in between me and him were keeping me blocked. You know? And I did it responsibly, and it's something that I'm very grateful for. But there was a lot of things outside alcohol that were kind of producing this craving, and I would find myself drunk again, you know? But I would kind of go to the treatment center, I would be outpatient, I would get loaded, and, I was always using that prescription pad, and there's a lot of this, that go out behind that, you know? A lot of people get offended because they'll say, well, that's from a doctor, you know? A lot of people get offended because, they're on right now. I understated my experience and what happened, but I started getting free, and I went down to L.A. It was sort of my last run, but what happened was, in October, I was detoxing one more time, man, and I was at a relative's house, and I really thought that was it for me. You know, I thought that was just going to be, I had a pretty good run. I'd been in AA, and I'd been to three treatment centers at this time. My grandparents had just weighed down about $30,000, and then the last one didn't work. I was extremely dependent on alcohol and opioid drugs, and I thought this was going to be my life. I had other plans to separate me from good at all. I haven't touched a drop of alcohol since then. I haven't had a narcotic in my system. But the point was, it was at the darkest, man. And if there's anything, I know to be drugs and alcohol, he will attract me right before God's light is about to shine. And he separated me. I was in my cellular recognition. I did a little detox room there. I took a phone call. I got to give credit where credit's due, my home group and my sponsor, Teddy. They got me in there. They stood by me the whole time. They never turned their back or judged me or anything for these failed attempts at sobriety. In fact, they stuck with me. They just stayed exactly where they needed to be, and I was just, just right next to the door. So that when I was ready to walk back through it, they would be there. I went through this mission, and I went right into, after that rescue mission, I went to the Pine Recovery Center. The Pine Recovery Center. We can do that here, right? It's a great position. I don't give a damn anyway. I do give a damn. But I'm very proud of those guys and that center, because not only my home group, which is the primary purpose group, but Pine Recovery Center was a big part of my recovery too, because they... All right, now you can talk. I love you guys, and that's something we do. That's actually our meeting now. Right now. See, now we're talking. I had to put that camera out. See, Pine gave me a place to go when nobody else would. The advice was turning off, like I said, and nobody wanted me, not my bartender, not my drug dealer, and not my family. And Pine gave me a place to go, and my head got clear, and, Sam would come over every Sunday with the book, and I did everything that was asked of me in that program. But I did something that was kind of beyond, is that I started working the 12 steps out of the big book for the first time with a very clear head and a very strong determination to be done for good and all. You know, and during that process, man, I came off all these pills, and man, I was having experiences. Some of them were from the book, and some of them were just straightforward from the withdrawals. from literally trying to launch from medication. I ended up trying on November 18th of 2011. I was free and clear of everything by that New Year's Eve. And I remember standing out on the porch, at Pine Creek on New Year's Eve, man. And for the first time, since I made that promise to my buddy sitting in that car, man, this feeling had come true. I was free and clear from all chemicals, man. And only now I started to enjoy something called peace of mind. You know, I wonder how many of you in here are not just suffering from alcohol, but are suffering from lack of peace of mind. You know, because that was always the case with me. But I was real good at eating, and I was actually pretty good at work with some of these things. But I would go home at night, and when I was there, I was never comfortable in my own skin. And I didn't have anything like the peace of mind that I saw people that were recovered, truly recovered from the disease, that they were experiencing. I wasn't having. You know, to be suicidal, in a sober condition, man, it's very scary. To be suffering from untreated alcoholism, you know, is a bad spot to be in. And I just want to really reach out to each and every one of you, maybe in that spot, there's a solution, there's a way out that really works.
Right.
It's not a way out where you just have to do it a day at a time, but this God is big enough to remove your fear today, tomorrow, and the year after, where you can actually be reborn. That's what page 63 in my book talks about, and I've experienced that. You know? A rebirth, a new person unrecognizable from the man I was when I was out there drinking. I would go through this, and, you know, step one is probably what I'll try to really deliver, is the physical difference. I would go through and read and study the doctor's opinion and see that genetically I'm just very different. And the thing going into my system, I wasn't having a reaction that other people were. And the depression that was removed, it was a trip because me and Teddy were sitting on a little wood bench out there on a Sunday afternoon, and he said, what's the first step of recovery? Anybody know the first step? That's sort of the outline. But actually, if we go to page 30, we're going to see that the first step is learning. It's a learned experience. It's learning that we had to fully conceive to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. So what I learned there was that wasn't about coming here to the podium and telling you guys, and it wasn't. And it wasn't what the therapist told me, because they told me something different. They told me to go look in the mirror. Anybody had that experience? It was not here in alcohol. And I actually just didn't do that with a straight face. I don't know if you guys have tried that. What I shouldn't have been doing is going to look in the mirror and going, you're the problem. Right? We have a year at a time that actually said that, because you're looking at the problem. And that's true. If you think it's your mommy or daddy or boyfriend or girlfriend or something, and that's why you're drinking, you're caught in an illusion, man. The truth of the matter is, it has everything to do with you. If you're the real alcoholic. Find out what deep down within it. And what I found to be in my inner self was this kind of a spiritual voice. Yeah. Like I talked about, that feeling going home and just not having any peace of mind, having any thoughts of misery, depression, suicidal thinking, maybe I should go back to drinking. It was this type of void right in the gut, at a gut level, that you could just drive a truck through, you know? See, because for the real alcoholic, I found that when you take alcohol away from us, they get worse. And that was my experience. So what's going to fill this void? Who am I holding? Who am I competing to? And the power that I found that I needed to compete to was the power of God. You know, and man, I get emotional when I talk about this, because he separates me. He removed that impression, man. And when I went up and I prayed, and I got on my knees, man, and truly did it for the first time, and I'm absolutely screwed. There's nothing I can do if I'm going to die if I don't have the power of God working in my life. And all these pressures, all these ideas that I've always had about it, man, we'll push it aside and I'll start having experience. And like I said, he set me free at that moment. You know, I've been told, don't worry about the God thing. Easy does it. Let's take our time with this. And I'm begging you guys, if you're not any kind of position that I was in, to keep your power from the beginning. And go through the book of somebody responsible enough to guide you in that direction. Our job as sponsors today is not to take you on the race. You know? Our job is to get you closer to God, and you have a spiritual experience, and get free, and then you get fresh. Why is that? Can you can hop in the trenches with us and start digging. Right? We got some work for you to do. Yeah? It's our absolute privilege to be in that spot today. But these ideas about God, and then I'm gonna build a relationship and do it. I start building this relationship, and I'm seeing, man, I take the God that I'm so scared of. In fact, this God's pretty cool. You know, this God is like a friend. This God is like a father. This God is like somebody I have to talk to on a daily basis. And you just saved my life. We should get to know each other. You want to go out coffee, guys? You don't know what we want to do. And it's like, whoa, I'm going to get to build this relationship. And all of a sudden, when I'm sitting in that room at night, man, I'm not feeling alone. I've got this stuff that's going on. And I'm going to be guided continually through the work. So I understand that I'm laying these things aside, man, and I start seeing this as a friend. And then this is a pretty good spot where I can make a decision, right? And step three, it's like, okay, now I got this. The idea of God, my own idea, I know that he's going to be everything. That's my decision. He was nothing for a long time. I may have told you that Jesus saved and cut the shirt to do all this, but I wasn't living it, right? So in my experience, my actions were showing everything that God was nothing for so long. My actions today show that he is everything. You know, so I'm showing this and have this experience where, okay, is it time? Yeah, it's time. Let's get on our knees and let's say the third step, or let's give it to him completely. You know, let's make this decision work. Now, thank God, literally thank him, that I don't have to be the director anymore. Man, it takes a lot of energy. When I'm in control, right? And I kind of have holding my sitting in the right spot and we need to move just that way a little bit. And, man, who made this coffee? You know, I don't think my thought plane is completely different today, man. Those folks ask me questions. Would anyone know about my service commitment or work? I'm just saying, when my mind is in control, bad things are happening, man. But when God's in control, good things are happening. And that's what I found today, to be true, man. And I surrendered to him. And the way I surrendered to him was doing something a little different, man, than I've done in the past. And I was actually working in inventory, you know. And at this point, I was guided through another guy in our home group started taking me through this inventory, and I got, just like a lot of us, man, I got stuck. I'm just telling you, if you get stuck, it's not a good spot to be in, man. That's a good spot to find yourself in peace. You know, and a lot of people don't do the inventory because they don't think it's necessary or because they think it's too much work. I'm here to tell you, it is a lot of work, but it's absolutely necessary. You know, I had to pray really quick for God's power to take a look at who I really was. And I've been blaming all you guys for a long time, you know, and that was really easy. And I was scared that I was just going to live off. That third step experience was so powerful, and it's especially been removed. I thought I was just going to live off that for a little while. But that wasn't the truth, is that I needed to take a look deep down within what was going on with there. And I got to talk about who I was pissed at, you know. I got to look at some of these external conditions that were bothering me. But really what I found was a lot of truth on the inside. And I found that a lot of the damage that the harm that had been done to me, I had created towards other people, almost exactly the same. It was really a trip. That fourth problem is where it separates alcoholics anonymous from like rational therapy. You know, because I've been in therapy, and therapy is great for me. Is it not? Man. I want a third one, but let's do that again. Yeah, he's in my side and everything. Right, and you gave me some pills. Where do I sign up? And I was just on that for a long time, just that whole process. And you know, I don't knock that stuff down. I'm still active in that field today. And I'm not saying that prescription medication and therapy is not a solution. I'm not saying alcohol is not a solution. What I'm here to say is it's not my solution. You know, I got something that's much more powerful. And that's the power of God. And that's what he's done in my life. And speaking in, he's available to anybody. You know, and that's what I found to be true. I found this stuff in the fourth step this time. It just blew my mind. And that's something I'm in a position to go through a peer inventory. A peer inventory is something that I still go through on a daily basis. I was driven. As alcoholics now, our trouble is not alcohol, even though it looks like it, doesn't it? You think, man, I just don't have to get better. But really, truly our problem is our selfishness. And our selfishness right behind that fear that we're being driven by it. I'm just, like I said, driven around by fear. You know, I can't do anything, man. But I see in the fear inventory, God's idea, the way he wants me to live is very different than mine. See, there's fear fractured with a long fire. As I went through this inventory, and I faced those fears, I got down to 5-4. You know, so if I give you a real brief one, like, fear of being alone, right? That was always a big one for me, fear of being alone. I know a lot of you guys are suffering from that. You know, God's idea is that we have to be at perfect peace with me, alone, or around other people, right? I mean, it's kind of a circle. You meditate on that, and you do the work, and you see a different solution. That means that I don't have to be miserable when I'm sitting there alone all night, and I don't have to be miserable when I'm around you guys. But I can be at perfect peace, and I seek that power, and it's true. It's become true. I'm still human, being captured, but I'm not suffering nearly to the degree that I once was. You know, and then after that, I did a sex inventory, right? And a sex inventory has absolutely nothing to do with sex, right? The after sex, pokey pokey, right? It doesn't have anything to do with it. This book's been asking 9 questions on generally where I was selfish and dishonest, you know, with my relationships with women, right? And it's nothing to be proud of. I don't really joke around about it, man. What I like to think about is how would I feel if I was bringing that inventory to my sister, right? Because if we're all God's kids and we're all brothers and sisters, it's no different. You know, the what I did in relationships is not right, it's not fair, and it hurt a lot of people, man. So I got real clear on that, man, and I let God discipline me in a strong way. You know, He gave me an ideal when I came out of the inventory, and it's an ideal that I try to live up to. You know, our set powers are God-given, and I don't judge anybody for their conduct at all. You know, I think it's funny now because we'll come here and go, oh, so-and-so shouldn't be doing that or whatever. But like 6 months ago, we were smoking crack, living out of a dumpster like this, you know, doing all sorts of stuff that we weren't supposed to be doing, man, but we want to come here. You know, you should really get a job. We got all this sort of goofy advice. I don't have to sit and judge anybody, man. But I've tried to live up to the standards and all the things that the inventory has shown me. It took me about an hour. I meditated on that stuff. I did 6 and 7. God went ahead and removed every single defect that stood in the way. Not stood in the way of me and my success, right? That's what I thought, man, once you remove my fear, I'm going to go out conquer the world, man. And I'm a volunteer at Primary Service Center, man. I want you to remove this. Move aside, and I'll be the director, okay, you know? And he's going to pave the way, but it wasn't like that, man. He moved some things out of the way so that I could be more useful to him. Okay, so that I could carry his message a little stronger, so that I could be more useful to you guys. Right? Thought of other people, that's what this is about. I didn't come here tonight for Eric, I came here for you guys. I came here for the suffering alcoholic to share this experience. And I moved me through and had an 8-step list, which you could see in my inventory, these people, these places, these things. And I talked about it at the beginning of my talk, you know, that have been cleared up through the DNA process. In all honesty, I have folks on those names. I told them how long I was on the club. I told them I was on my nightstand. He said, how many names you got? And I said, yeah, you know, close to 100. He said, oh, too many. You know, he said, what kind of alcoholic were you? I said, a real alcoholic. The kind that did a lot of damage. So I'm setting those straight. I will go over 10 and 11 with discipline. With another guy from my home group, and I'm active in 12. What I'm honestly trying to do today is take a look at my 9-step list again, because I've seen over the holidays and things that are out of town. I really need to focus some of this energy back on making these amends to get cleared up. There's no use going around working 10 or 11, making these apologies when I haven't done some of the bigger ones. And that's just God telling me what to do. You know, my directions I take from Him today. I'm absolutely guided by the amazing home group and sponsorship there. But God's really speaking to my heart. When I went to Thanksgiving, when I saw my buddy, you know, there's still some real movement that needs to be done in our mindset so that I can get free now. And laziness, right, will keep me from seeking God. Laziness will keep me complacent, you know. If that happens, I become unfit spiritually. I become unfit spiritually, I may get the mental obsession again. What happens when an alcoholic, a real alcoholic, gets the mental obsession? Right? They often like may drink and then physical cravings alive and well. And I don't ever want that happening. I don't know what that happened. We're almost out of time. here's the deal. The truth is that I'm absolutely clear that will never happen again. That I'll never take another drink. That I'll be sober for good and all. If I can continue to do the work that's outlined in this book. Contrary, I'm absolutely certain that I will take it again. That it will happen again. I've seen it in my experience. If I stop living from this book. Man, there ain't no gray area for me. It's do or not. You know, I gotta stay active with this deal. If you're sitting around there and you've been sober for a little while, get busy, man. Get a service commitment. Get to use that. Get involved. Get committed to a home group. You might just be sitting on where I am at one day, man, where I'm sitting and I work with other alcoholics. And I thought, man, if I just got sober, things would be great. Like I said, you know, I'll be the director of the universe, right? Everything will be coming to me. Getting sober myself doesn't even compare to watching others recover. It doesn't even hold a candle to it, man. When you see the light now, I know. That's why I thought that my hunger was a cult. They were teaching me that. I said, my counselor told me I was just going to go out and look for a sponsor. Why are you guys offering this with all this help? You know? But they had, man, they had this awakened spirit, and they knew what it was like to see others recover. They weren't driven by selfishness, like we were talking about with the selfish program. They were driven by unselfishness. Unselfish acts of kindness, love, consideration, would be patient, correct, tolerant. They were driven by this so that I could get well. And I'm well today. And my job is absolutely turning out to be that gift to others. You know, and I do not have a lot of different facets today, but the most important one is my 12-step work. Right? My most important thing is to be of service to God, keep all the directions in this book, and I'll last thing I'll say is I'm here for each and every one of you. I truly love you. It's been my experience that I do need to do the same thing you've been doing, which is make the approach to sick and suffering. You need a way out, I can absolutely help you. You know, if you need some money, you're out of luck. I'm getting on the phone. Well, you guys, thank you for letting me share tonight.